Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. This is episode number 140. We've hit the 140 mark. This is nice. I am joined tonight by, one regular co-host. And Lizzie, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Awesome. I'm doing well. And the other one you're going to hear in a second here is Tim. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty well, although it's kind of hot up here in the Northeast. I'm looking forward to crawling back into Echo Base.
I know. That would be nice because it was really, really hot today.
I live in Florida.
Says the Florida girl. Well, the reason why we hear Tim tonight instead of Chris is Chris had something else going on. I guess something more important than random chatter. So,
heresy.
But by our policy, anything that goes wrong tonight is Chris's fault.
Yep.
So blame Chris. That's the hashtag for this episode.
I'm done with that.
Tim, you've actually got some news for the network. So why don't you let us know about your new project?
Yeah, in case you have not yet heard the promo for it, or the first episode, which actually just dropped Saturday, we are doing a new show, kind of a mini-series here on Random Chatter called Random Chatter Interviews. These are long-form interview-type discussions, so if you listen to The Nerdist with Chris Hardwick, if you listen to Aisha Tyler's interviews or her podcast, so, you know, longer-form interviews, where it's really just a discussion. We're not like hammering people with questions. And basically what we're doing is we are sitting down having discussions with other hosts and staff of the Random Chatter Network. So you kind of get to listen to them out of the context of the shows that they're normally in. And it's just kind of a one-on-one chat between me and them. I kind of get to know them a little bit. We talk about their lives. We talk about their interests. We talk about some of their podcasting. We talk about some other things. So it's a good time.
I can't wait to hear. I haven't actually heard the first episode. You did it with one with Chris, I believe, right?
Yes, the first episode was with Chris. I just recorded yesterday morning the second episode, which is with Jovial J. And tomorrow night, I actually expect to be recording the third one, which is with Joelle, who is Chris's co-host from the Courtcast.
Nice. You were getting these all out of the way early, aren't you?
Trying. Awesome. Yeah, you know, kind of, I have a little bit of travel coming up, so it'll be nice to get a few in the hopper so we can still kind of release them fairly regularly. And this is just a mini series. It's just kind of going through the summer.
Well, I look forward to hearing them. I like to find other stuff about my co-host I don't know yet, so it's always fun to do. And you'll have to schedule me sometime, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you and Liz will be coming up. So we'll definitely get everybody in.
We'll have to work on our impressions, Tim. Do a whole episode in other people's voices.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's get right into the news actually this week. And I imagine this is going to make Lizzie's heart all warm and fuzzy.
It does.
Wonder Woman did remarkably well this weekend at the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
I shouldn't say remarkably because, I mean, it was a good movie. $57 million estimate. So we're recording this Sunday night, so $57 million for the weekend estimate. It's the best second weekend for any DC movie. So that's awesome news. Only dropped 45%. I think the other three, Batman v Superman, Superman, and Suicide Squad, all dropped in the 60s from first week to second week. So that is a huge coup. I mean, this is great news for them. This is the first time they've had a really successful movie hit the second weekend with a full head of steam. What do you guys think about this longevity and how this is going to do going forward?
I'm really excited about it. I think it's definitely a good prediction of how this movie's going to do overall. Obviously, it had an outstanding first weekend. I was there. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie. And I'm hoping it continues to do well. And I hope that it starts to make the folks at DC think about how good movies are made.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not to be overly critical.
No, but I mean, I think we have to. I mean, we look at movies with a very critical eye these days, and the longevity of movies is so short-lived in the box office that if they don't really do well right away, the bad word of mouth is just devastating to these movies. I mean, it used to be you'd get the whole first weekend out of the way, and maybe the second weekend would be suffer a little bit if the word of mouth was bad. But now it's almost, if the word of mouth is bad on Friday morning from the Thursday releases, the movie tanks the same weekend. It's like, wow.
Like The Mummy?
Or even before that. When, you know, when the critics are allowed to watch it, we all wait and see what they say about it. And not that that can kill it. I think that weighs in a lot for super fans that were, you know, like I definitely watched for word of the critics coming out of Wonder Woman and saw that it was good. And I mean, I was going to see it either way because I don't put too much stock in like what another person thinks. I'm a different person than them, so I might have a different perspective. But I think that can affect it a lot. I think the turnaround is faster than it's ever been. People used to give a lot more grace for movies, and now there's such a saturation that you're you're like, if it's not as good as XYZ, I'm not interested in it.
Yeah. But I mean, with the social media these days, I mean, you know, word on Twitter is the movie isn't doing that well, or this is not as good as we think it could have been. I mean, that turns a lot of people off right away, and people make their decisions almost day by day. The only thing that's kind of changed that now is a lot of movie theaters are reserved seating, and you got to buy your tickets in advance if you want to see it opening weekend for a good seat.
Yeah.
So that might save some of these movies a little bit, but I'm happy to see it with a very small drop.
I'm not surprised this one had the smallest drop out of DC. You know how I feel about the rest of the slate.
Now, I mean, what do you attribute that to, though, Lizzie? What do you think that was the reason?
I think lots and lots of good word of mouth. I think the strength of the movie itself. I think the fact that this is the first major female superhero in a time period, in a, you know, political climate when that's a hot button issue, rightfully so. And I think like just a weird juxtaposition of a lot of different things happening all at once, plus the disappointment for a lot of fans personally of Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel. This one looked a lot more hopeful, the tone that I would want a DC movie to be. So I have so many different factors. So I think that social media being bigger than it's ever been before, yeah, I think it's like a million different reasons, but I love seeing it. I love hearing new people talk about it. I've had like 3 or 4 people text me and be like, do I stay till the end credits? And I'm like, I love that I'm the person you think of. No, you don't need to.
Oh, come on. I always stay through the credits.
I know. I do too.
I feel it's like my responsibility. I mean, I'm not trying to be above everybody else, but I feel, you know, hey, you know what, these people deserve to see their names up there, and sometimes there's funny stuff in the credits even if it's not a scene or anything, but I just feel it's almost respectful to stay.
I feel the same way. I love the movie music, so I love staying and listening to the music. Yep. And seeing everybody's names, but I know the people texting me and I know that they don't care, so
right.
I recommend to them not to stay, but I would recommend to someone like you, a fellow movie lover, that like, of course stay.
It's also fun to see where it was filmed, and you know, sometimes you see the second and third units and where they were, and you know, it's like, yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you.
Well, let's see. While we're doing box office, we might as well talk about the rest of the box office for the weekend. So Wonder Woman took first place again. So it's nice. 2 weeks in a row, $57 million for Wonder Woman. The Mummy, which released this weekend, only hit $32 million and been getting horrible reviews.
A bummer.
Yeah. I did not get a chance to get out and see anything this weekend. So I probably would have went to see The Mummy, but it wasn't really calling to me. I mean, I want to see it. I think it, you know, might be a fun popcorn movie, but it didn't do what they expected it to do, I don't believe. Captain Underpants took in number 3 with 12.3 million. Pirates still hanging in there at 10.7, and Guardians of the Galaxy still hanging in there in fifth place at 6.2.
That's some staying power.
It is. I mean, that's unusual to see a movie that long around in a theaters doing that well. I mean, this is its sixth week in the theaters.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I don't think it's too unusual for Marvel movies, though, is it?
No, probably not. I mean, Marvel movies do have a little more staying power than most, but you know, look at the top 10 here, and it's the only movie at 6. Most of them are 1, 2, or 3. A couple 4s in here. Alien Covenant's still in the top 10, and everything's still in the top 10.
Yay! I think we'll see Wonder Woman up there for a while, so.
Yeah, I think so. And that doesn't hurt my feelings any, as I said, movie draft, so. Kind of a public service announcement. This kind of caught me by surprise. I didn't realize they're coming back, and thank my DVR for recording them. But Orphan Black and Dark Matter have both returned for summer seasons. Do you guys watch either one of those shows?
No. I do not.
But everybody recommends Orphan Black to me, so it's on my short list or my long list.
You guys should both watch Orphan Black, definitely. Dark Matter is fun, but I wouldn't say you have to watch it. It's not a bad sci-fi show, but it might be a better show for binge watching than some, because it's got such a detailed plot. If you're a fan of those, look for those, because they are back on the air, which is nice. Let's see. You guys saw the new trailer for Black Panther?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm so excited. I'm stoked.
Awesome. So this is the next movie from, well, not next movie, but the next movie that there was a trailer for from Marvel. The release date isn't until February 28th.
But it was such a meaty teaser. It didn't even feel like a teaser.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Teasers to me don't really have a lot of dialogue and show you what's going on. They're just bits and pieces and clips. And that's really what this was. But it looks polished for being this far out.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, I guess I'm comparing it to like a Star Wars teaser, or even the other Marvel teasers that they do. They've been much, like even the Thor trailer that's out now, I feel like is less meaty than this trailer. It just had so many different shots. It wasn't just like setting the tone, but I just felt like.
See, I don't know. This to me reminded me of a Star Wars teaser, because it was a bunch of scenes put together that really didn't tell you much.
Yeah.
They were all fun to watch, and they all introduced you to people that are in the movie and kind of how they're going to be portrayed, which looked awesome to me. I mean, I don't know anything anything about Black Panther as far as the comics go. I never read the Black Panther comics, but this looks amazing.
I am pumped for Michael B. Jordan, and I am pumped for Lupita. I thought they look amazing in it, and I love both of them. I just pumped about them.
Tim, what about you? What was your reaction to this?
First I thought it was great. I thought it had a lot of energy. I thought the cast that they have lined up for it is fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be hard hitting. I think it's going to have a slightly different feel, a different vibe to it than a lot of the other Marvel films do. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really cool to open up his character and kind of his closest world and his interactions. And I don't think it's an origin story of any sort, but it is obviously very much focused on his nation and their resources and the perception of his nation by the rest of the world. And it seems to a certain extent a measure of underworld that has some ill intent for them. So it'll kind of be neat to see, I think, him defending his own country and his own interests while trying to maintain that. It seems he kind of has at least what they alluded to in the teaser, kind of an isolationist type of perspective, because obviously people thought that this is a third world country when they are truly quite developed and they've managed to hide that from the rest of the world.
Yeah, definitely. There's going to be a huge coming out of this nation and how this is going to be portrayed. I'm excited about this. I mean, I don't know anything about the character. I once would have said this is maybe a risk for Marvel, but after they've done things like Ant-Man, I don't think it's a risk at all for them. You know, they're going to come out with this movie. It seems to be done really well visually. Hopefully the story is there to support this, because, I mean, I think movies without a good story are not going to do well in the long run. But seeing how this is all part of Marvel's grand master plan, I don't see any reason why this will be any different than anything else they've done.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I love how Marvel gives everybody the chance to have their own voice. You know, when you look at Iron Man, he's very distinctive from Cap, from Thor, and everybody just has their own voice. Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, like everybody is allowed to be in their own world, but then they come together and that's the strength of it. And so I love seeing where they're already going with him and really fleshing it out, the characters. Like I said, seeing so many of them in the teaser, I just was getting chills watching it, and I was like, I want it now. Why do we have to wait so long?
I would love to know more about the process that Marvel's gone through in the writing of all these movies, because obviously they're all going on concurrently. I mean, each movie isn't developed in a vacuum, but how much freedom does the writer and director have to do their own story versus, you know, what do they have to hit? I mean, are they just giving them milestones? You have to hit these places, or is this story kind of all written in conjunction with everything else? I mean, do they have a story group like what Star Wars does, or?
No.
I was just going to ask that same question.
Track of it, Star Wars does. Just because the movie verse and the comic verse are so different, they might have one for sure. I think, just from what I feel, I don't know, I haven't read anything, I don't know for sure, but hearing like James Gunn talk and like the Russo brothers and everybody who's sort of worked on one-off movies or one or two movies, like Joss for Avengers, it seems like they're given, writers, directors, both, it seems like they're given quite a wide berth to give their flavor to the movie, but obviously they do have to hit plot points going into Phase 4, you know, whatever the future of the MCU will be out of Infinity War and all that, and you always want to have it build to a certain point. But it seems like because each of them have such a different flavor and feeling, that they are really given freedom to like breathe their own voice into it. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen and from what I've heard from some of the directors, yeah. But I also get the feeling that some of them are almost being strong-armed into doing what, you know, Marvel wants, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, they've worked out really well. I don't think they've had one flop yet as far as the box office goes.
Yeah.
Some stories are better than others, and I think some of that is just that they've been maturing too. The newer movies tend to be a little bit more mature in the writing style and the way they've been put on screen versus some of the earlier ones. I mean, I'm really happy with what they've done, and I can't wait to see the rest of this. I mean, I like things that are planned out, whether it's a movie franchise or a TV show. I don't want it to be, you know, okay, where do we go next season? I want these guys to know where they're going ahead of time, so we don't have, you know, these long stretches of episodes or a movie here and there that really doesn't seem to fit in. When you see Marvel put up these screens in different rooms where it shows their layout for the next 10, 15, 20 years, it's like, wow, these guys really know what they're doing. And that's awesome.
Yeah. It's so unique. I think that we haven't seen anything really like that. Even in Star Wars, I mean, you knew that George had this like 9-story arc back in the day, but even that was sort of like, yay, we finally get to do some of it. But this is like, no, we from day one, from the day Iron Man came out, we knew where we were going or where we wanted to attempt to go. And the stars have aligned and we've just like completely had free reign to make that happen. Very unique, mm-hmm. I think, in Hollywood for like that to happen, which is why it's so fun to watch.
It's definitely huge for that to happen and definitely not the norm for Hollywood.
Yeah.
One thing I saw online this weekend that was kind of cool was there was a still of the trailer with Martin Freeman and Andy Serkis sitting across from each other in that like interrogation room or whatever it was. And the caption was something like, this is the first time they've been together since The Hobbit. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't really put that together, but it's like, wow, that's kind of cool. Let's see here. Are you guys fans of 24?
The real 24.
Which I, too, watched some of. I never really got into Legacy. I might have seen one episode.
Well, they canceled it, so you're not missing much. Don't start it now thinking you're going to get into a nice long 3 or 4 season arc. No, it's sadly one and done. I mean, this is the second time they've rebooted the franchise because they had 24 ran for what, 10 or 11 seasons? With Kiefer.
Yeah,
quite a while.
And then they had the 24 Die Another Day, which is only 12 hours. And that was just a one-and-done thing, too. It was always supposed to be a one-and-done thing. It wasn't going to be a resurgence.
But it was still Jack Bauer, what's that? Right?
Yeah, it was still Jack Bauer. Yep, it was still fun. Felt very much like the same show. I was like, why did they cancel when they're just going to do this again? But, you know, I was happy because I do like watching 24. This year, they came out with 24 Legacy with a new character. Chris Carter, I think, was his name. Had the same feel, but didn't really hit all the right notes that the old 24 did. But what puzzles me the most is this article that says that Fox is already thinking about the next 24.
Oh, God.
Does that make any sense to you guys?
No.
I mean, but why? Okay, you had a great successful run. You did another money-making grab later on with the same characters to do one more season. And then you tried to redo it again, and it didn't work. And in fact, Fox said they were happy with the show, but they're going to cancel it. I'm like, okay, that's talking out of both sides of your mouth. And now they're saying at the same time, but let's sit down with the original producer of the original 24 and see if we can do something to renew this show again.
See, to me, it makes a lot of sense. While they might say that they're happy with Legacy, clearly it did not get the public attention that it needed for them to continue the series or to continue the show. They obviously had a great formula before. And it's one of those things that, you know, like a lot of those long time continuing shows, if they stick to the formula that works, they can have a lot of continued success. And it's an interesting balancing act where you have to stick to that formula, which is very popular with a lot of people, but you have to still be able to introduce enough new elements to keep it interesting. And by doing that, I think you can continue to garner a lot of viewers and sustain them largely throughout a season, which is going to get you a new season.
What made 24 so successful, though?
Well, first of all, I think Kiefer Sutherland did.
Yeah.
You know, great actor, very compelling actor. I think that certainly just simply their formula of each show and how they structured the shows and how they moved them along and what their plot points were, not only in the individual shows, but also in the big picture. What was the goal of each show what was the goal of each season? What was the driving factor behind that?
It was unique at the time.
Exactly. And it's tough. I mean, there is a lot of competition that's out there. There are now a fair amount of action-y types of shows where we feel this pressure that the characters have to accomplish certain things within a certain time frame, and it might not be that 24-esque kind of thing, but you know, there's some other compelling pressure for them to get through things. So it's and we very often see that. We often see, you know, we saw that with reality shows. The first reality shows came up, and then all of a sudden everyone was doing them. And then we saw, you know, our crime procedurals, and suddenly everyone's doing a crime procedural. You know, every network has these fundamental things that they lean back on that are
right.
That they can stick to. So I think that if it is a reboot of sorts, really kind of, I guess, in whatever definition a reboot needs to be, that's probably where they need to go. I think they tried messing with the formula a little bit too much with Legacy.
Yeah, but I don't think the formula's changed very much in Legacy. It was basically the same concept. I mean, it was this, you know, horrible thing happens. Let's figure out who did it, why, and then it, inevitably there are three or four other tangents to this that we can make the story, you know, a full story. But the one element was missing was Kiefer. And it comes back to me that that is the reason why the show was so successful. The first couple of seasons of 24 were excellent. I thought it got a little bit tiresome after a while, but it was still good enough to watch.
Well, season 6 sucked because they tried to bring in his family and no one cared about his dumb dad and his stupid brother. And that was the mistake. But 7 was good. The other problem with it is, number one, you're right, Lou, like not having Kiefer. Kiefer is 24. So make this something else. Make this a different show. Like, part of trying to recreate history is you're actually not recreating it because you don't have the magical elements that made it work at the time. Number one, Kiefer. Number two, post 9/11 fear of terrorism, which yes, we still have, but it's changed. And we're not okay with the kind of torture that we saw then. Maybe we shouldn't have been, but I think we as a country, for some reason, like, gave Kiefer a free pass to just rip people's fingers off because of fear. And we live in a different world than we did when 24 season 1 came out. I mean, it is very different. And so part of the magic that made it a great show was the time period, and that it was brand new, and that it had Kiefer, who is an excellent Jack Bauer. He's the driving force of that show. So even season 6, that sucks, I'm like, I'm still going to watch it because I love Kiefer. I don't even care at this point. I don't even care that it's not a great show. I want to watch him. So you erase the time period, you erase the newness of the formula, and you erase the main actor, and what do you have left? Something that gets canceled.
Right. Not much is what I was going to say. You know, and you hit that right in the head. I didn't even think about that, the fact that, you know, we're living in a different world now than we were when this first came out.
Yeah.
We are definitely removed from the elements that made 24 so successful in the beginning. You're right. It still doesn't change the fact that I don't think they should try to recreate this again and do something different. I mean, if they had introduced characters in 24 back when it was still on to replace Jack Bauer.
Yes.
But they didn't. They just canceled it and went away. I mean, if you cancel a show and let it go away, don't bring it back to try to do it again.
Let it go.
Unless you can do it continuously. Yeah. I mean, if they had put a new team in place and made this thing happen that way organically, they might still have a new show going on, you know, the way it's going. I mean, look at Law and Order. I mean, those seasons have run forever. I mean,
yes,
the first Law and Order went forever, and Law and Order SVU is going even longer. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same cast. They've changed out actors. They've changed out people both on the law side of things and on the police side of things in both those shows. Law and Order probably more than SVU did. They were changing characters almost every season. The actual crew of the real, you know, office there,
right,
they had different people all the time. And it worked because you kept enough of the original elements there to bring this new guy in and let the people get used to the new guy, so that when one of the old guys left, the new guy is now the old guy and he's bringing somebody new again. You can't just let Jack Bauer go and then 2 years later say, let's go back to CTU.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, similarly, NCIS, CSI, they've also been able to sustain. They've had some cast changes, but I think their draw is, one, they have a great formula, and the ensemble casts help quite a bit. I think that was kind of a fragile thing with 24 when everything really leaned on Kiefer Sutherland.
It really did lean on him hard. Right. It was quite an ensemble cast, but he was the star.
Right.
Yeah, quite a bit. And, you know, he's now in Designated Survivor. I don't know if you guys watch that.
Love it.
Yep.
I love it. It's an incredible show. I'm glad that it got renewed for a second season.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely works. Obviously, while he is the center of it, I think that they have built a nice cast around him that supports a lot of it. And I think they have a really good, compelling storyline that is also pretty darn contemporary. You know, it's not sitting in this post 9/11 thing. It's now sitting in what the current definition of terrorism is in this world that we're living in, which is very different from the thoughts and the fears that we had after 9/11.
You're right. Yeah. So much that was unknown after 9/11. And now it's known what to expect, I guess. Not like we know where everything is, but we know how things might play out differently than they did back then, you know, or almost like we're expecting it now. So, but you know, it's funny you mentioned Designated Survivor, because like 24, even though it doesn't ultimately revolve around Kiefer 100%, without him, you don't really have the Designated Survivor per se. He's still the key to that show.
Right.
Yes.
Designated Survivor is the new 24 that Fox wishes they owned. And so they're trying to, like, come up with their own, like, reboot of 24. Meanwhile, everyone who loved 24 is like, no, we already have Designated Survivor. Like, we don't need fake new 24. And they're also, you're right, it is, like, sort of, it is 24 in our world in that it's new, it feels fresh, it's still somebody that we love, but it's talking about the craziness of politics in a time when mainstream people are knowing more and more about political situations because of where we are in our country than I think ever before. Mainstream people who would never have been interested in politics are now turning an ear to the political system because they're worried. But it's a point of our world. I mean, if we're talking about post 9/11, we're in a post 2016 election. And I think that they really hit on a lot of those points. And I think that they really feed into that and make it really compelling story with somebody we love.
Very true.
Keeper!
Tell us how you really feel, Lizzie.
Boyfriend.
Oh, again.
Yeah.
Jeez. Tim, I say a running thing on a show now. Everybody's your boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. I listen, so I hear it.
Tim, you guys see my current imaginary boyfriend's Chris Pine, though.
So. Yes, I've been seeing that really prominently on Twitter lately.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, I've seen that once or twice, I think. Well, speaking of Chris Pine, we have a Star Trek story coming up next.
Oh, good. I love Chris Pine.
It's not about your boyfriend, though, sorry. So for a while, though, there's been rumors of a new project that Nicholas Meyers is doing relating to Star Trek. For those who don't remember, he was the ghostwriter and director of Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. And he's been rumored to have a new project going on where he's writing and producing. And a lot of people thought it was a rewriting of the next Chris Pine Star Trek movie. But I guess it's been ruled out that it's not that.
Are they signed on for more in the franchise?
There's one more movie, I guess, by them at least. That's what I've heard. There was talk about... Myers did do some of the initial writing for Discovery. Is that coming up this fall or next spring? But this is going to be something beyond that. There's been talk about him doing a new movie that has nothing to do with Discovery or the current Star Trek movies. And this was from an article I read on Anecdotal News. And they're talking about this as maybe the beginning of CBS and Paramount putting a lot of projects together and getting a lot of things going for Star Trek, kind of like what Disney has done with Star Wars. Multiple things going on at once, multiple things in works, TV shows, movies, books, video games, you know, everything. And I'm really excited about this because I love the Star Trek franchise and the universe that they created. And it seems like we've had this vacuum since Enterprise went away, you know, aside from the movies, but the movies are only once every couple of years. You know, we don't have that weekly entry into the Federation that we used to have. Now, are you guys big Star Trek fans? Or I think Lizzie is.
Tim, I'm a decent fan, I would call myself. I mean, there are certain series like Next Generation I thought was absolutely incredible. I really enjoyed Deep Space Nine, and I saw, I'd say, the vast majority of it. Enterprise, I did not see very much of, but I've seen all the movies, old and new. I really enjoy the franchise. So I think it's a great idea for them to expand on it. I think there is so much for them to look at. You know, it's obviously something that is more grounded than Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it always has been. And that concept of exploration.
Yeah, there's definitely less fantasy to it.
Yeah. And, you know, while they integrate the alien races and that kind of stuff, the writing on the vast majority of what they have done has been absolutely incredible. And I'd really like to see more of it. I would love to see them continue branching out. If they do some standalone films that don't necessarily have to do with the Enterprise at any time period, I think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We've obviously seen success with that when we had shows like Deep Space Nine. And, you know, Deep Space Nine was a big risk for them. Hey, we're going to do something that doesn't involve the Enterprise.
Right.
And it was wildly successful.
Yeah. And that was the first, now I forget when Roddenberry passed, but that was the first series that took a turn to a darker side.
Yeah.
Of the universe. And develop some themes and some stuff that Roddenberry never went into. I mean, Roddenberry's view was, hey, everything is good, everything is great, we're one big happy society, there's no prejudices anymore and all this other stuff. And in reality, that's probably not going to be the way it is if we get to that point where we're exploring the stars and starships. There's going to be some prejudices there. And it was nice to see them look at that darker side of things. You know, they brought the war with the Dominion into the universe, and there was some darker episodes there about how things you would do that you might not normally do. DS9, I think, did a great job with a lot of that stuff. And yeah, if we can go back to some stories like that and get some good writing and get a weekly TV series back on the show, I mean, on networks, that would be great, and have more than one thing going at one time. You know, I mean, we went right from Next Generation to Deep Space Nine. They ran concurrently for a year or two, I think. And then towards the end of Deep Space Nine, we had Voyager. Mm-hmm. There was a movie in the works coming out. And did Enterprise, Enterprise started up towards the end of Voyager, I think it was. So they had a lot of stuff going on, and it was never really a lull.
They had the Next Gen movies coming out in between all of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the four Next Gen movies come out
right
in the midst of all of that. So Gene died in 91, and episode one of DS9 came out in 93.
Okay, so it was out. Yeah, it was totally after that. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think they did it right. I mean, they didn't change his vision so much that it was unrecognizable, but I thought it brought a little bit more realism into the world.
Oh, it still felt very much like Star Trek. And you're right, with it overlapping with TNG, brilliant. I mean, I loved seeing when the Enterprise would dock at DS9 or like...
yeah, it was cool, yeah.
You know, Worf coming over was a huge bridge for that to give right, it yeah, sort yeah. of
Worf
like...
Worf and O'Brien come over.
Yeah, the like Star Trek paint on it, you know, that you felt it was in the world. And then same with Voyager, you always felt like, I feel very differently about Enterprise. I don't feel like it felt part of the world of Star Trek that I loved, and so I didn't really watch it. I can't
agree.
Using the Who song as your theme. No.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Enterprise. It didn't feel like it fit with the rest of it.
TNG is my favorite. Captain Picard all the way, and Commander Riker. Huge crush on Commander Riker my whole adolescence.
Of course.
So dreamy, that hair. Boyfriend.
I like the look that Picard was going for with the, you know, the chrome dome.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah, see?
I have a bookmark of him guy. That sticks out of the book, like his head is like sticking out of the book.
Speaking of this, as a really non-reference that I wasn't even thinking about bringing up here, this weekend was the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal, and they usually have somebody local or somebody in the area do the interview of the podium, and Patrick Stewart was there and did the podium interviews. He's got a thing where every time he makes a podium, he will drink champagne out of his racing shoe.
Ugh.
You know, yeah, kind of disgusting after you've been in a race and you're sweating and everything else, but he usually has a good time getting the interviewer to drink with it. So a couple races ago when he was on the podium, he got Gerard Butler to drink out of his shoe. And this time he wasn't going to bring it up to Sir Patrick Stewart, but Patrick Stewart brought it up and says, hey, I'll take a drink out of that too. I was hysterical.
He just loves life. I love him.
He does. He's a real fun guy. But back to the story at hand. The first thing I thought of when I read this article was that, yeah, resurgence of Star Trek would be great again, but isn't it a year too late? Wasn't last year your 50th anniversary? I'm like... You guys are missing the boat here. It's like, what? If you have all this stuff planned, you should have made something better for your 50th anniversary. It seemed like the year went by with nothing.
No, I don't think that's true, though. I don't think there's ever, like, a not good time to have a resurgence for that. I mean, you could have said the same thing about Star Wars, that there's, you know, like, they didn't restart it now on their anniversaries.
No, I know, but... To let the year go by without really even, I don't know, it just felt like there was an opportunity missed.
But I don't think it's ever too late to start something like that. And given what Marvel and Star Wars and like these other properties are doing with these, like even DC TV, like giant crossover things and like this sort of giant world building that we're sort of getting used to as our norm and sort of like really want to see from big properties like that. It makes sense that they would try a foray into that. I mean, they should. They were doing that before this was a thing. They did their crossover. They had their shows bleed into each other and create a bigger world. And five series were a part of each other. And they didn't have to be all up in each other's business, sort of like the CW show for the four shows are currently. But they still were world building like way before everybody else was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All really good points, but I just feel like they missed. They should have had something last year. But I'll be happy if it gets going again. They get something going. I'd be really happy about this. I mean, if Discovery does really well and it's exciting enough that makes me want to pay the subscription fee, which I don't think it's going to, but it'd be great if it did.
If they just put it on network, then we wouldn't have a problem.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But I mean, I liked the days when we had Star Trek every week on TV to look forward to.
Same.
I wasn't tired of it at the end. I mean, I thought Enterprise was maybe a little bit off key, but you know, some people said that, well, you know, we had all the seasons of TNG, DS9, and Voyager ran for 7 seasons each.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a lot of time. I mean, it's not 21 consecutive years because they each overlap by a year or two, but call it 19 years worth of Star Trek. That's an awesome run. But now we haven't had anything on TV since 2005. And if Discovery does well, and the movies have certainly done well in the last couple of years, this might be the time for having all this new stuff come out. You know, some more books, video games. I mean, I'd be all over that.
I would love it. The thing I love about Star Trek is that it is us. It's us exploring. It's very much like our future, our utopian future. We figured out war. We figured out money. We figured out how to get outside of our world and explore. And it's us. You know, whereas Star Wars, I know it's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but it never felt like our world. It was different worlds that and different species and different
Star Trek. It was fantasy versus sci-fi.
Yeah.
Star Trek, to me, didn't have any fantasy element to it at all, really.
You're right.
And you're right. It is that utopian version of what we have today. You know, you guys watch The Expanse on sci-fi?
No, but I keep hearing a lot about it.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, you have to. That is, you know, us down the road, maybe not quite as far down the road, but the technology jump didn't really happen. It's more like take us a couple hundred years of advancement and, you know, we can get to around the galaxy or not around the galaxy, but around the solar system a little bit faster. It's a little bit more like us doing that now. And they still have the war going on between, you know, the colonies and Earth and this and that. This is the utopian version of what The Expanse is. So both have a place. I like the conflict of The Expanse, and I like the, hey, everything is great, let's go out and explore the galaxy version of Star Trek.
This is to tell you how much I love Star Trek, is that I was introduced to Tom Hardy in Star Trek Nemesis, which is, I love that movie. It's not even one of the great movies. I love that movie so much. It makes me cry when Data dies every time.
Spoiler.
Get
oh, no kidding.
Really old movie, so like get over it.
But how many times has Data died? That's the thing.
I love that movie, and I just didn't care that it wasn't like, you know, people like slam it, and I was like, I don't even care. I love this movie. I own that movie. I watch it all the time. Plus, Will Wheaton makes a tiny like drive-by cameo as Wesley Crusher, who was like my other main love in middle school and high school, by the way. Wesley Crusher for life.
Really?
Oh.
Wow.
So much. So much. And then when he went away, like, went to the academy, and then he came back and he had his uniform, like, oh, be still my heart.
And when he came back and had that little fling with Ashley Judd? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, okay, let's move right along here.
I wanted to be Ashley Judd.
Okay, so I think wrapping this episode up, we're going to talk about the movie draft just because I want to gloat a little bit. Yeah, why not?
Do it.
So let's see, movie draft here. We have Chris in the lead with $488 million. Mike is in second place with $470 million. So they're almost neck and neck. I'm in third place, distantly, with $269, and Eric is bringing up the rear with $77 million. So you know, what's left now that we have, what, less than 3 weeks left, I guess, because we run through the end of June. Let's see. Eric's got Cars 3, Amityville the Awakening, and Transformers The Last Night.
Why would you put Transformers on your list?
Because it was a big release for the summer. It's at our movie draft. You're involved in the next one, I think. So
I'm involved.
You need
in
to start.
It?
I'm going to try to make sure you're involved, yes.
I'm not going
to
put Transformers in, I'll tell you that right now.
Well, it's not being released in the summer, so you don't have to worry about that. Does she not know how this works?
Nope.
I don't think she does. I don't think she's familiar with it, so we're going to have to coach her up.
We will coach her up before we do our draft. So Eric's got a few movies left. I don't think any of them are going to get him up even to where Mike and Chris are now. I mean,
no.
Transformers, what's that going to do? Maybe $100 million? It's not going to do $400 million.
No. Amityville's not going to do much of anything. Cars 3 is going to do a little, but
It'll do well, but it's not going to do that much to get him up there, I don't think.
It won't even do what Transformers does.
I don't know. Well, what did Cars 2 do? I forget.
I didn't even know there was an Amityville coming out.
See?
Most people didn't.
That's because no one cares.
Let's see. Now, me, on the other hand, I'm halfway there. I'm at 266, and I think Wonder Woman still got another $100 million in her.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, it's going to do three easily, I think.
They're already projecting
that. I'm all set then. So that brings me up to, what's that? Another, you know, 369. Then I've got Despicable Me 3.
Yeah.
Now, the first two did $300 million easy. I think this has got that much in it at least. And if Rough Night and 47 Meters Down do about $40 million between the two of them, which I think they'll do more than that, I should be looking at $700 million total, I think. I think I've got this.
Despicable Me is going to put you up there, too.
I think so. I think it's going to give me a $300 million.
More than Cars 3 will.
I mean, I might be able to win this with just Wonder Woman in Despicable Me.
You probably can. You probably have a pretty good shot at it. I mean, the kicker is that Chris and Mike have nothing left, so they're just sitting static. They're not moving at all. You're doing nothing but moving forward.
Yeah, their numbers are coming up a little bit here and there.
But they're not going to have a big push like you will. You'll be fine.
No. No, yeah, I think I got this. I think Wonder Woman's going to do another $100 million, and I think Yeah, Cars 3. I mean, Despicable Me 3 should do really, really well. So everybody go see Despicable Me 3. Help me out. Bring your kids. Go see it 3 or 4 times, you know.
But that said, let's not all count our box office results before they have.
No, I won't do that. I'm not going to be that guy, but I have a feeling I'll be the one moderating the next movie draft, so.
It's probably true.
And this will be my second week.
Yeah, if the first one is counted as being official.
It was the first movie draft. It's not the beta movie draft. It's the inaugural movie draft. Just keep that.
What do you get for winning?
Nothing. Well, you know, actually, I've got a trophy I got to finish making.
He has to make his own trophy.
Well, no, I want to make a trophy that we can mail back and forth to the hosts as we win.
Well, you...
It's been in my basement piecemeal. I haven't put it all together yet.
No, Liz, the big thing is you get to then be the host for the next movie draft.
Oh.
Be the auctioneer.
Are there drinks involved?
Seeing how you do it at your own house, yes, you can have anything you want.
There was one other piece of news that I forgot to put in our thingy, but there was the Battlestar Galactica reunion this weekend.
There was?
Yes.
Awesome. I didn't hear about that. Where was that?
I'm not sure. I just saw it in my Twitter feed. I kept seeing pictures from it, and I was like, oh, Battlestar. Love Battlestar Galactica. Anyways, honorable mention.
Nice. I'll have to track those pictures down, because that looks like it'd be fun to read about.
We forgot to talk about Adam West.
Quiet down. You had your chance.
Oh, sure, Tim. Bring us down. Bring us down on the bad note.
Sorry, folks.
A little sad note.
Yes, we did lose somebody this weekend that was important to all of us, I think. Adam West was, what, 88?
I believe so.
Yeah. I didn't hear what he passed away of.
Mayor West, you have lymphoma.
Oh, my.
Probably from rolling around in that toxic waste.
I see.
What in God's name were you trying to prove?
I was trying to gain superpowers.
Well, that's just silly.
Silly, yes. Idiotic, yes.
I don't think they said... and I know, actually, he was, like, recently at a con or some other event just in the last couple of weeks, so he didn't seem to have any particular health issues, but, you know, at 88, things can happen.
Yeah, I mean, he had a full life, obviously, and very important to a lot of us in, you know, comics and that kind of stuff, so it was always fun to see him do stuff, and he was active right up until the end with a lot of stuff he did. I mean, I loved his stuff on Family Guy.
Loved Family Guy.
Nice going, Joe.
Well, it's great being back in the North, where people are civilized. Hey, what are you guys all on a date? Gay!
A couple of really good tweets out this weekend, just people's memories of him and, you know, all of his work that he did.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. Seth MacFarlane, speaking of Family Guy, the creator and main voicer, of a lot of the characters, Seth MacFarlane kind of put together a nice little in memoriam for Adam West. And, you know, that was very meaningful. A lot of the cast of Big Bang put some things together that I think most of theirs got released on Instagram. I think most of the cast is primarily on Instagram. And Adam West was, in the last season or two, he was on Big Bang. I mean, he's done a lot of appearances through a lot of shows over the last couple of decades, oftentimes playing himself, which is kind of the great thing. And that's really a nice homage to him, really respectful to him to have him come on as himself,
right,
to a lot of these things. But he also did play other parts and other characters. But obviously the big thing that he is most significantly known for is playing Batman in the original TV series and the original Batman movie.
True, Robin. It was noble of that animal to hurl himself into the path of that final torpedo. He gave his life for ours.
That was my first introduction to Batman, was his television series.
Me too.
And
mine also.
As campy as it was a lot of fun. And
as campy as it was perfection.
It really
was.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like shark repellent is the best thing ever.
I mean, it was basically the comic books come to life on television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Batman to Coast Guard. Batman to Coast Guard. There's a drifting submarine 2 miles east of Sandy Nose Lightship. It's filled with human jetsam.
It was really, really fun to see, and he'll be missed. We did want to put that in here, and I totally forgot about that. Tim, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, it was, I just think that he was kind of really important to, even if you're not like a big Batman fan or, you know, big into DC Comics or big in the Family Guy, I think people do recognize the impact that he had on pop culture as a whole. He certainly did a lot. He certainly did a lot. So yeah, he'll definitely be missed. I mean, he was currently doing things. You know, he still was Mayor West and Family Guy.
Oh well, yeah, Tim. Thanks for bringing us down at the end there. That was. Well, I think that does wrap up our episode for this week. I thank you guys for listening to us. And if you have any feedback for us, please send us an email. You can do so by getting that email to us at randomchatter@randomchatter.com. That's the best way to get anything to us.
You can find us online at on Facebook, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork, as well as randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter at randomchatter. You can find me on Twitter at Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's.
You can find me at Nerd in the City.
And you can find me on Twitter at my name. It's just at Lou Secchi. That's L-O-U-S-E-C-K-I.
And for all of our other shows on randomchatter.com, make sure to give them a listen, like Tim's new Random Chatter interview show and Echo Base and all the other amazing ones we have. Give them your ears.
Maybe you're a huge Star Wars fan. Maybe you're just a little bit of a Star Wars fan. That's okay. Go listen to Echo Base. It's a good time.
Maybe they're not a Star Wars fan, though.
But they could still give it a listen. I mean, Star Wars is very impactful. We talk about impact to culture and society, and there's all sorts of good things that come out of Star Wars. No pressure, though. We're not pressuring you. We're in fact, recording our 100th episode of Echo Base on Tuesday with a special guest, Heather Antos from Marvel Comics. Last thing I have, please leave us reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get our podcast from.
If you care to support the show, patreon.com is a place to go. It's patreon.com/randomchatter. Just help us keep the lights on around here. It does cover all of our support costs we need for hosting and bandwidth and everything else. We really do appreciate that. And right now, we are in the midst of redoing our Patreon perk levels. The one that's going to stay the same, though, is probably the most popular one, the most important one that we have, is our $1 a month pledge, and that is getting you into the Slack community. We do have an online community of all of our listeners that are in this grouping of people that have donated to us that is just gets out of control sometimes. It's a very fun atmosphere to be involved with. We talk about everything from sports to the shows to politics. But it is another outlet for you to be online and discussing your thoughts and feelings with. So we appreciate you doing that. And I guess that's it. So until next week, take care, everybody.